I'm your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to Alchemy, the podcast all about building a business on the front lines of the new economy. Welcome back to this week's episode of Alchemy. Very excited. I have a very special guest today, Brett Novy. He's the CEO at PharmaCann. Brett, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, Jeff. It's good to chat.
Brett, it feels like I was just talking to your team and, you know, we were saying, hey, it's been a while since Benzinga. It was only in April, but we were saying, oh my God, it feels like it's been ages just because there's been so much going on in the industry. So it's good to have you on here. You know, for everyone that's tuning in right now, PharmaCann is, you know, based in Chicago. They've been around since 2014 and they're one of the country's largest vertically integrated cannabis companies. And, you know, Brett has had several roles over there. I know, Brett, at one point you were actually the CFO and the COO, and now you're the CEO. So you've had, you know, more than 20 years of experience in multiple disciplines. I mean, you were kind of in the finance realm, you were in operations, investor relations, biz dev, investment management. And, you know, talk to us a little bit about your background. Like, what made you actually get into cannabis? What was that kind of moment for you?
Yeah, so my background was, I would call it a traditionally trained accounting slash finance background. And then, yeah, my practice was more finance. And so I started my career in the corporate restructuring practice at Arthur Andersen. So I'm aging myself for those. Some people may not even know what Arthur Andersen was. It was one of the, you know, at the time, I think it was Big Six accounting firms. But while I was on the, I was in the consulting side of the business, doing restructuring, you know, so financial and operational restructurings for our clients at the time. That was a great experience for me. Carried on with that, the sort of through the finance vein, and I went to work at a financial services firm. It was a trading firm. And what ended up happening was the two co-founders of that firm had a liquidity event. They sold the business is a better way to say it. Mm-hmm. Exited that firm and then started a family office together. And that family office provided the seed capital for PharmaCann. And so obviously I had worked for these two gentlemen for probably 6 or 7 years at the time, maybe not that long, maybe like 4 years at the time that they made the investment into PharmaCann. And the PharmaCann initially, when it first started, it was an amalgamation of licenses, basically 4 dispensary licenses and 2 cultivation processing licenses in Illinois, mm-hmm. and then licenses in New York as well. And so the first early days of PharmaCann was spent building out that infrastructure to open those facilities. And when PharmaCann was right around the time was ready to start generating revenue, that's when I got a phone call from these two gentlemen and they said, hey, we could use someone with some financial acumen to help the company as we're about to, you know, start ramping up revenues and starting our operations. And I believed in the industry. I believed in, you know, the social equity aspect of the industry. I believed in the health benefits of the plant. And I believed that net incrementally, what we were going to do could really improve people's lives relative to the status quo, right, where cannabis was completely illegal. And so I thought it seemed like once in a generation type opportunity. And I also had the comfort of knowing the financial backers well. I sat down and had a meeting with Teddy Scott, who was the co-founder of PharmaCann at the time, and we just absolutely hit it off. And so when I left Teddy's office that day, I knew that I was going to do this. And so I came over in a financial role. And then just by the evolution of the business, right, we continued to win licenses. We continued to expand our operations. We continued to look at M&A transactions. I just took on more and more and more responsibility. And that eventually dovetailed into an operational role where it was CFO, COO. And then roughly about 3 years ago, I took on the CEO role. And so here I am today.
I love it. Brett, you know, I definitely wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, what's happened across the Northeast. I know you guys are based in Illinois, but obviously, you know, New York, New Jersey kind of coming on board for REC finally, which is insane that it's taken this long. But, you know, talking a little bit about the New York market, you know, you guys were really one of the, I think, the original 10 license holders in the state.
Original five initially, yeah.
Yeah. Which is amazing. And so I'm just curious from you guys, you know, one, like, how are you guys navigating the regs today and really prepping for the recreational launch? I know there's a lot of questions in New York right now. I think from a consumer standpoint, people are really, you know, they want it and they're waiting. And, you know, for the I would say for the most part, from like a standard consumer, you know, who's not in our industry, that's just looking to purchase, they're kind of in the dark, right? So, you know, maybe you can give us a little bit of shed some light on what you guys are doing preparing for the recreational launch. And what do you think of, you know, the New York, New Jersey market in general?
Yeah, sure. So one thing you said, Jeff, but really, like, people want it. And I'd say that it's coming, right? Which is great, because there's sort of this certainty about that, where there hasn't been much clarity on the timing of the transition of New York. Historically, it's been a really long developing medical only market. And so recreational cannabis is coming, and we're really excited about that. And people should be excited about, you know, New Jersey and New York. This is all part of sort of the long-term secular growth story that will be cannabis in the United States. And just looking beyond next year, you know, you're looking beyond New Jersey and looking beyond New York, then we'll 12 months from now, we'll be talking about Pennsylvania and Ohio and Maryland. And so it's very exciting, right? Is my point is the thesis for the change is playing out in real time, and the long term story remains intact, which is irrespective of sort of what's happening in this country and in the world from a macroeconomic perspective right now, which is, you know, concerning to say the least. So specifically, what are we doing for New York? Well, we've been working. We're looking for some visibility on what the final regs will be. And the OCM is going to put these out in sort of, I'll call it packets. That's not the right word, but for you know, they've released some regs already around packaging. And we expect more clarity over time between now and the end of the year with respect to what the final regs will look like. But there's certain things that we do know. We do know that we believe that we're going to be a very, very important part of ensuring product supply to all the various dispensaries and all the various processors. And so because of that, we've started an expansion project of our New York cultivation and manufacturing facility that'll basically quadruple our output. And it'll be a much better, higher quality product because we're taking what I'll sort of call our version 1.0 greenhouses in New York, and for the most part, transitioning those to indoor grows, more traditional indoor type grows. So that's one of the things we're doing on the cultivation and manufacturing side. And we also have visibility into a framework where we will have 8 stores in total. They'll all be medical stores. And then in addition, 3 of those will allow for the co-location of medical and adult use sales. And so we're sort of figuring, you know, we're starting to get our store, the redesign with the POS, and I trying to identify the best locations to locate these stores throughout the state. So there's things like that are occurring right now. And I think what you'll see is over the next 90 to 100 days, a lot more clarity around the regs, which would be very helpful for us because it'll allow us to ensure that you know, we could help support the adult use market and ensure its success.
Yeah, you know what I find very interesting, obviously, from being a resident in New York and a lot of friends who, you know, have partaken in the industry for a while. I get friends that are like, "Hey Jeff, have you heard of this brand before? It's so great." And I look at it, I'm like, "That's not a brand." I'm like, "That's not." Actually, I've never heard of it before. It's an illegal product. And because it's recreational right now, quote unquote, legally, right? And people are allowed to you know, carry cannabis, consume cannabis. There's this really weird gray area right now that is just, it's rampant. And it's definitely a problem because people who are in New York have never been exposed to purchase legal cannabis before, right? And so they think because it's legal now, any, you know, mom and pop could just build a product, launch a product, you know, not following any regulations. And so I wonder how that's going to impact, you know, as more retailers come on board, right? And as, you know, we have a more defined expectation of when that's going to launch. But I think, you know, it's weird. I'm sure there's other markets that have dealt with this before, like once it was passed, but I see it all the time.
Exactly. It's not the first time, right, that we've seen this in this industry. And it'll be a process and it'll become more clear over time. And the packaging regulations will be a big part of sort of the education here. And I think that it'll be really important. The whole premise of this industry is to allow for those people that are currently engaged in that to come into the regulated market. And we want to support them in the regulated market. And so that's the end goal. So it's very exciting for me because everybody can be aligned and we can create win-win-win situations for everybody. The customers win, the operators win, the state wins. It's a very unique type situation. Not many win-win-win situations in business these days. So it's exciting to be a part of it.
Yeah, I think too, you know, Brett, one thing that's super exciting is, you know, I feel like the last 3 years have been a blur for most people just because of COVID. And, you know, no one really knows what year it is anymore because we lost 2 years, right? But I think for the cannabis industry, which has been so interesting to watch, is that, you know, COVID obviously accelerated our industry, right? Sweeping legalization, cannabis deemed essential, right? If you remember back in the day, 2 years ago, you couldn't get a haircut, but you could buy weed, right? And so I think as we've seen legalization expand across the country, like dominoes, you know, consumer expectations have now kind of started to rise in what they would like to see, right, from a retail experience, right? Because now people have been to dispensaries, they've experienced, you know, some really bad ones, and they've experienced some really amazing. You go walk into a store and you're like, wow, this is not only beautiful, but everyone's so nice and they're helpful. And so what are you guys doing at PharmaCann as far as, you know, really building out a leading, you know, customer retail experience when it comes to your locations?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's been an evolution for us over time. If you think about the initial markets we were in order to win a license, we designed dispensaries that looked like doctor's offices and had a process, like the patient would go through a process similar to being at a doctor's office.
Right.
And so it's been a journey for us, we started at the most conservative type of medical focused 30 to 40 minute consultations with every person, every visit, if that's what they wanted. And now we are evolving to just a traditional retail type model. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've sort of had to change our mindset and change our approach. You still want to offer that service, that touch, that sort of that, you know, that medical type experience to people that want that experience. But over time, as people become more comfortable and more knowledgeable and more educated on the plant, you know, they'll shy away from that. It's kind of becoming more of a transactional type experience for people that are familiar with what they like and what all the various product forms are, etc. And so it's still complicated. Although we're moving more toward just a traditional retail, it's still complicated in the sense that you have to offer the high touch and the light touch. You have to offer pickup in store for those that just want to be in and out in a split second. So you know, that's what we're doing. We're making sure and we're designing our stores so that we could try to engage, give a great experience to every single customer and or patient, however they choose, however they would like to engage with us as a dispensary. So
yeah, I think you nailed it right there. And I think that's something that's definitely on the mind of a lot of MSOs. And, you know, we saw this, and we actually, I don't know if you saw in the news this past week, but we just bought a company called 916, which is these incredible screens that are fully transactional and touchscreen. So they're very interactive. And what's great about it is that, you know, they can now go into these dispensaries if you're a consumer. And let's just say you've been in there 20 times, you know exactly what you want. You go right in, you put your order on the screen, you put all your information in, and you just go pick it up at the window. You don't have to talk to anybody, and you could get in and out real fast. And so I'm glad that you said that, because we've been seeing that as well. And that's why we made that acquisition, because, you know, obviously at Philo, we do so much when it comes to compliance and media and retail solutions. So this is just adding to the flywheel. So it's super cool. And, you know, you got to change with the times based on the consumer demand and needs. So I'm glad that you actually said that. You know, I wanted to ask you, just because you've kind of been in multiple roles, from, you know, finance to operations to, you know, running a company, and, you know, what really does it take to lead a successful MSO in, you know, today's rapidly changing landscape?
It's so difficult.
It's a big question, Brett, but I think it's a good one.
So there's all these things popping into my head, but I'll start with a few. One is, communication is so important, and it's so hard, especially with, you know, we have 52 dispensaries across 8 states, 10 cultivation processing facilities across 8 states. And you think about that dispersion of the employee base, it's very hard to have a solid line of communication with everybody at the same time, and make sure everybody understands, hey, this is a strategic initiative, and this is why we're doing it. And, you know, that's difficult. So communication from the leadership team to their various team members, cross-functionally and then geographically, is very hard and critically important. And quite honestly, that's why we tried to get people together as much as possible at our corporate office. You just find it's very efficient to have everyone together, working together, and instead of trying to litigate something over email for a day and a half, you could have a 2-minute conversation in the hallway. And so that's one part of it. The other part, I would say, is we call it fail fast, which is, you know, you're making decisions very quickly based on the information that you have at the time. And facts and circumstances can change, or the conclusion you reach based on a certain set of data might be wrong. And that's okay. I'd rather have people take the information they have, make a decision, and then realize that it's not working and pivot, then sort of double down, dig in their heels, and say, you know, hey, this isn't working, but I'm going to force it to work or find a way to make it work, right? So we always say fail fast. So it's sort of in the vein of being fluid, being dynamic, being willing to adapt. That's the other big part. And then lastly, it's just you have to patient. You just have to be very, very patient, because which is kind of a weird thing to say, because everything in this industry is moving so fast, but also things in this industry are moving very slowly. You know, it just, yeah. If you think about SAFE and 280E and,
oh my God,
I was building financial models for the company back in 2016 that assumed there'd be no such thing as 280E by 2019, right? Well, that's obviously not the case. So while some things are moving fast, others are moving slow. So you just have to sort of be patient, just realize everything's going to take 2 times, 3 times longer than you expect, and try to bake that in.
Very, very good insight. And I'm actually going to take that from you, fail fast, because I love that one. So Brett, you know, before we break, I think one thing that I, you know, wanted to also bring up, obviously the public markets right now are insane. I think many of us try not to look at our accounts on a daily basis these days. But I know that you guys were in talks about a year ago about going public. And so just curious on any plans on, you know, IPOing, any pros and cons, you know, I mean, I think right now it's kind of a brutal time, you know, in the public markets, but just curious on what you guys were thinking there.
Yeah, certainly. So we've made it known that we plan to be public at some point. The market will kind of dictate that timing, obviously.
Yeah.
It's hard to say exactly when. I think there's when I speak to our investors, I speak to sort of the catalyst that I think need to be in place in order to have the opportunity for us to effectively execute an IPO, right? So what are those catalysts? And we talked about two of them early on. New Jersey. New Jersey's going to have, there's going to be great numbers coming from the people that are currently in New Jersey. There just is. We've seen it time and time again. Every quarter, it's going to continue to build. Q3 is going to have some number. Q4 is going to build off Q3. So you're going to have some really good data coming out of New Jersey. New York, Q1 of 23, you're going to get some really good data coming out of New York. Hopefully this year we'll have something passed in Congress that related to safe banking. And to me, while that's a catalyst of itself, what I believe the market's really going to read into that is, wow, we actually passed some sort of cannabis legislation in this country. So now the country's sort of ready and primed to pass the next piece of cannabis legislation, right? So I think that that's really going to be the biggest part of something like a SAFE getting passed. So that'll be a nice tailwind. Then you're going to get into like, you know, Q1, Q2 of next year, and we're going to start talking about the next cluster of states that are going to legalize. Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, Ohio, Maryland. And that's the kind of environment that's ripe for companies to IPO, you know?
Great insight. So Brett, listen, really appreciate you coming on the show. Good to see you in person. Good to see you digitally. And lots of great stuff happening over there. So appreciate you taking the time out of your very busy day.
Yeah, it was fun, Jeff. We'll catch up soon.
Awesome. Thank you, Brett.
See you, bud.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.